Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm John Favreau.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
On today's show, Donald Trump goes after RFK Jr., Larry David goes after Donald Trump, No Labels goes after anyone left who will join their ticket, and MAGA World goes completely nuts with conspiracies about how the Baltimore Bridge collapsed because of open borders and DEI programs. Then Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett of Texas stops by the studio to talk to Tommy about the secret to driving House Republicans crazy. I feel like they're almost there, but...
Yeah, I mean, where are you driving them to?
But she does do a particularly good job of it. But first, a tale of two campaigns. Joe Biden just capped off a very busy month of campaigning. He hit 8 swing states in just 18 days with a New York fundraising event featuring Barack Obama and Bill Clinton that's expected to bring in a record-breaking $25 million. That is more money than the Trump campaign raised in December and January combined. And the Biden campaign also has more than 3 times the amount of cash on hand as the Trump folks do. Over the last month, they've also opened 100 new offices and hired more than 350 new staffers in the swing states. Meanwhile, the other campaign, Trump has held just one actual campaign event. One event since clinching the nomination on March 12th. The campaign hasn't yet made any significant investments or hires in the swing states, even though they've fired dozens of staffers since taking over the RNC and are reportedly quizzing potential new employees on whether they believe the 2020 election was stolen. Instead of campaigning, Trump has been splitting time between his golf club and a Manhattan courtroom, where he will soon be tried for the first of dozens of criminal charges. Trump's legal bills are piling up, which is one reason he's short on cash and reduced to making fundraising pitches like this one on Truth Social.
But these Soros-backed prosecutors and politicians, Democrats, all that are after us, we have to go out, we have to fight. They're communists, they're fascists, they're lunatics, and they just don't stop. They don't know how to give up, and you got to hand it to them for that. But that's the only thing you got to give them credit for. They're bad people. They're against our country. They don't want our country to make it. There's something wrong with them. But we're fighting. We're winning. You see what's going on. So whatever you can do to help financially would be fantastic, because we have to beat it. If it's $5 or $10 or $100, whatever you can do.
They're communists and they're fascists, just in case. Now, Dan, if you woke up to that news today that I just mentioned about the two campaigns and hadn't seen any polling over the last several months, you might be surprised to learn that the race is basically tied. But one would think that the huge gap between the Biden and Trump campaign operations will ultimately make a difference in a close race, right? Tell me it will.
You need me to say yes to this?
Whatever, no, you can say whatever you believe.
No. Look, I think you don't even have to read all of that. If you had just said to me that he was preparing to start a criminal trial for one of his dozens of criminal charges, like, that's it. That's the point at which I am shocked that the race is tied. I don't even need to know about his laziness or lack of money or that bizarre pitch. Just one guy is going to walk in a courtroom and may leave in a prison jumpsuit. And that the fact that race is tied, that's alarming and quite surprising. Mm-hmm. Look, this is always so hard to talk about this in such a close election, because of course it could make a difference. Everything can make a difference. It's why it's always such an exhausting election to talk about. 50,000 votes over 3 states, a handful more organizers, a few better ads, a couple more campaign visits. Any one of those things could be the difference between democracy and authoritarianism, right? It's just that's how narrow the margins are. So it's important. The thing that I think is that this has reminded us of is that there is an advantage to incumbency. There had been this sense, I think, and even I felt it some, that Trump had negated some of Biden's incumbent advantage because he had glided through the primaries. He never really had to like get on debate stage and muck it up with a bunch of yahoos. He didn't, you know, he avoided some of the more demeaning parts of the primary process and just basically ran as a nominee the whole time. But he was spending money in those states to win those delegates. And the Biden campaign was clearly behind the scenes, while things were very quiet, building an operation and putting in place a plan that they were going to launch the moment he walked off the stage during the State of the Union. And they are doing that, and they're executing it quite impressively, I think.
Now, it does seem like the Trump people could catch up after all these stories ran about how far behind they are. I guess the Trump campaign did a call with reporters today where they said that the RNC will be opening dozens of offices and hiring hundreds of staff in the next month or so. I listened to you and Sarah on yesterday's episode, and you made the point that, you know, Biden has a lot more cash, but Trump will probably have enough cash to run the campaign. And of course, we know that he was outspent by Hillary Clinton in 2016, still won that campaign. So what do you think? Is this just sort of a temporary, you know, where the general is just starting out and people need stories to write? Or do you think this is a real advantage that Biden will have through November?
Look, yeah, he has the advantage now. And yes, Trump can narrow the gap, but time is the only non-renewable resource in a campaign. And so Biden is going to, this is Trump time that Trump is wasting. And I think the Trump campaign may be misunderstanding their own success in 2016. Some of the things he was able to do that allowed him to negate the financial disadvantage with Hillary Clinton and to avoid sort of the traditional campaigning are not available to him this time. His ability to dominate the political conversation does not exist like it used to, right? The entire world was dialed in 2016, everything he was saying and doing. Every single tweet was not just like on CNN and MSNBC and Fox and in the New York Times. It was on local television. It was on late night comedy shows. It was on social media. That world doesn't exist anymore. You can't reach people that way. You have to do it in a more systematic, piecemeal approach. And they have not yet shown the ability to do that. The other advantage he had is he recognized the market inefficiency around Facebook and how he could sort of gig the Facebook algorithm, which benefits his sort of outrageous content, to drive the conversation and reach a shitload of voters at a very low cost. That is not available to him in the same way either. Right. Democrats have narrowed the gap there. We figured that out. But Facebook is also deprioritizing that sort of political content. So the ways in which he was able to ally the sort of political gravity in 2016 are not available in the same way. So he's going to have to come up with new ways to narrow the gap or get better at traditional politics, one of the two.
So I know that he's not campaigning as much as Biden is because he is lazy. He has also had some courtroom appearances that will continue to keep him busy. We've talked about that. I wonder if there's anything intentional about it as well. Let's see what you think about this. I mean, it's like Biden's job.
Is this a theory? You're giving me a theory?
I'm giving you a theory.
Okay.
I'm giving you a theory. I'm just something I've been wondering about. Biden's job is pretty clear, right? He needs to make the race a choice between 4 more years of Biden and 4 more years of Trump. And a big part of that is reminding voters why they don't like Donald Trump. Trump's job is to keep the focus on Biden and make sure that voters don't remember how awful he is. One way of executing that strategy is to simply not be in voters' faces as much and to lay low a little bit.
I think there is something to that theory, right? I think you are right that the more Donald Trump is in the news, the less well he does. And he has been in the news a lot recently, as the campaign has kicked off, as he's become the nominee, as his court cases have been more intense, the more intense focus in the Supreme Court case on immunity, like that's all been not great for him, is my take. Mm. The one thing that I think that they may also be missing is that his goal was to keep the focus on Biden and keep the focus on Biden in the way in which Trump wants Biden to be viewed. And that was a much easier task when Biden was being much quieter and he wasn't campaigning and he wasn't on air. Right. He was really shadowboxing against a caricature of Biden being promoted by the right wing media, by clips on social media, by sort of the Biden discourse about his age. And Biden is now pushing back. There's a countervailing pro-Biden message happening, both from his campaigning and from a serious amount of television advertising. So just simply sitting back and letting sort of the world beat up on Biden and sending some truths and making some jokes about it, that I think will not work in an engaged campaign. So yeah, it may be that he's trying to keep the focus on Biden, but he's going to have to do more than just, I think, step back if Biden's going to be actually actively making the case for himself, which he's now doing effectively and with money behind it.
I will say also that the idea that Trump can somehow muster the discipline to lay low, make himself the center of attention.
Your new Trump theory that John has put on here.
But I was wondering if, like, you know, the people in the campaign, it could have been a strategy that they are at least aspiring to. I don't necessarily believe they'll be able to execute on it.
That is the advantage of Truth Social, right? Because before, if he wasn't campaigning, he was tweeting, and tweeting was getting him a ton of attention. He is just truth in like a maniac out there and no one knows or cares, right? It really is like the Creed's blog from The Office where Ryan just opened a Word document and told him he was posting on the air. That's kind of what Truth Social is. And so,
well, the Biden campaign's though doing a good job. Their rapid response operation and their Twitter feed has been like copy pasting his truths a lot more, yeah. Which I think is good because it's like getting them in the mix a little bit more.
Yeah, it's good. It's really, the stuff the Biden campaign has been doing over the last several weeks since the campaign has fully kicked off has been quite impressive, I think.
Let's talk about the money. The New York Times ran the numbers. Trump has spent more than $100 million on legal bills since leaving office, which, according to the Times, nets out to more than $90,000 a day. And somehow, the guy who just loves telling us how rich he is isn't paying for any of this with his own money. How is that possible?
Well, John, do you know how people like Donald Trump get really rich? They spend more time
scam other people.
Well, they're better at taking money from other people than spending their own, right? So that's how they got so rich. It is one of the reasons why Trump is at a money deficit is the big money donors probably don't want to give money to have that money spent on legal bills. They would love to defeat Joe Biden. They would love lower tax rates. They'd love to be able to pollute with impunity. But the idea that they're going to pay for his criminal defense, it gives them pause. It is certainly, I think, affecting donations to his super PACs, which are being massively outraised by the pro-Biden super PACs.
Yeah. So instead, he's just, you know, asking people for $5, $10, $15, $20 so that they can fund his legal defense.
And many of them will do that, right?
The guy's, his entire life is just a series of scams designed to benefit one person, Donald Trump. That's it. That's the whole campaign.
That is, I think, where this one of the reasons to talk about the legal bill stuff is to make sure that every rich person knows that their money is being misused that way. That this guy who just made $3 billion on paper for his scam website wants to take your money and use it to pay his legal bills. Like that can depress donations among the rich folks. But the other reason is you tie it he's asking you to pay his legal bills. He's selling Bibles. He's selling sneakers. He's selling NFTs. He's doing all these things. It's all part of the narrative you just laid out, which is he's in it for himself. He's not in it for
anybody.
And
by the way, if he becomes president again, what a great way, what a great easy way for foreign government to curry favor with Donald Trump. All they have to do is buy some shares of Truth Social.
Or buy just dump boxes a bunch of money of the Lee Greenwood Bibles. By the crate.
It's the grift never ends.
We just see MBS wearing those Trump Air Trump ones or whatever those sneakers are.
Yeah, huge minority stakeholder in Truth Social, MBS with his holding up his fucking Lee Greenwood Bible. One last thing here on this new RNC big lie litmus test for new hires. Obviously, it is Trump's Republican Party, has been for a while. He is free to staff it with as many election deniers as he'd like. It does seem like it may limit the talent pool that he can choose from to run this race, and also maybe the appeal that he can make to voters who don't believe the election was stolen. I don't know. What do you think?
I said this the other day off mic. I hope the DNC is asking their hires if they think Biden was the legitimate winner. Because if the answer is no, we don't want those people on our team.
It is an important litmus test. Yeah, yeah, no, so, I do hope it's being. Yeah.
It is funny that people are so worked up about some junior MAGA kid being forced to pass his litmus test when it is the actual litmus test for membership in the party writ large. If you are a member of Congress and you are unwilling to say that the election was stolen from Donald Trump, you basically get run out of the party. So this is not the RNC field organizer interview process is low on the list of problems as relates to Donald Trump's MAGA extremism, big lie election denier bullshit stuff. Like it's what you have to be a Republican now. That is the price of admission to the party.
I do think it's just yet another proof point that this is what the second Trump administration will look like. It's like kooks, morons, grifters, right-wing extremists out for revenge. You got your Mike Flynn's, your Stephen Miller's, Steve Bannon's, Laura Loomer, Marjorie Taylor Greene. This is it. This is who's going to be in charge of the government. And as a campaign message, again, it's like what you were saying. You know, if you got Joe Biden, who wants to be a president for everyone, even the people who don't vote for him. And then you got Donald Trump, who is a president only for people with undying loyalty to him and all of his craziest conspiracy theories. You got to sign up for all of it in order that, or otherwise Trump doesn't want your vote, doesn't want you to be part of anything, and is not only going to not help you, probably going to come after you. That's the difference.
I like to say I picked up a paper, but I haven't done that in years. But I was on the internet today and I saw a story that said potential Secretary of State Rick Grenell meeting with foreign leaders. And I was like,
not just foreign leaders, like right wing autocrats all over the world, just finding all the authoritarians and fascists he can in every country. And he's just, you know, just wait until Trump's back.
It just hadn't even occurred. I mean, this is my own ignorance, but it hadn't even occurred to me that Rick Grenell was going to be Secretary of State. Like, obviously, that's the case, but it's just like that is the level that we are dealing with here.
Yeah. And again, you don't need Senate appointments. First of all, you're probably going to get Senate appointments because you're going to have like a pretty MAGA Senate at this point if Trump wins again. And even if not, all you have to do is just install someone as the number two deputy, leave the top job open, and they'll get to do whatever they want to do with no confirmation from the Senate. So that's what we're going to get. Trump's latest messaging has also been as sharp and disciplined as ever. He spent most of the week on Truth Social attacking the judge who's about to preside over his first criminal trial, the judge's daughter, Ronna McDaniel, MSDNC, Sleepy Eyes, Chuck Todd, et cetera, et cetera. The whole, he had to weigh in on the whole Ronna drama. But he also attacked someone he doesn't mention often, independent candidate and self-proclaimed spoiler Robert F. Kennedy Jr., calling him, quote, the most radical left candidate in the race by far, and saying, quote, I guess this would mean he's going to be taking votes from crooked Joe Biden, which would be a great service to America. I love that he is running. Trump fanboy and future cabinet secretary Vivek Ramaswamy certainly agrees. Here he is on Fox Wednesday night.
What we need this November is a decisive moral mandate, a landslide of Reagan 1980, 1984 proportions. And I think we have an opportunity to do it. And if RFK being in this race helps that, you know what? I think that could be a good thing for this country. And I'm against any Democratic effort to try to remove him or keep him off the ballot, as they will try to do.
What do you think's going on here? Is Trump actually afraid of losing votes to RFK Jr.? Is he trying to define him as a lefty so that RFK takes votes from Biden? Is it both?
Yeah, it's always so hard to divine the plan here. But I think to the extent there is one, it is to try to basically do to RFK Jr. what Adam Schiff did to Steve Garvey, where the super PAC that supported Adam Schiff in the California primary ran all these ads attacking Garvey as being a MAGA Republican to raise his name ID and make and get MAGA Republicans to vote for him. I think what he's essentially doing here is saying, look at this radical lefty, to try to get liberals and more progressive Democrats or more progressive voters, I'd say, who are not super happy with Biden to go to RFK Jr. Now, is he executing this plan with subtlety? No. Is it fully thought through? No. But I do like that is part like RFK Jr. right now. And everyone here obviously has already listened to the Wednesday pod where I talked to Liz Smith, who's working with the DNC on it, on responding to third party candidates. He takes from both, maybe a little bit more from Biden is what we're saying. You know, that could tip one way or the other as more of these double haters come home, which often happens with third party candidates. So he's trying to be what I see what he's doing. Which is what he always does, which is like try to do the card trick with the cards sticking out of his sleeves. But I kind of get what the trick is.
Yeah. I mean, you and Liz talked about RFK's VP pick, Nicole Shanahan, on the Wednesday pod. Any more thoughts on this choice now that we've had a few days to learn more about her? I noticed a Politico headline from this morning that caught my eye. RFK Jr.'s vice presidential pick calls IVF one of the biggest lies being told about women's health. She also wanted to fund a study to see if 2 hours of morning sunlight will help with fertility troubles. I noticed. So,
You're a busy man. You're running a media company. You're basically podcasting 18 hours a day. You probably did not watch the announcement, did you?
I did not watch the announcement. No,
it was wild. It was scheduled for like, I don't know, maybe sort of like 10 in the morning. And Liz was supposed to come on the podcast at 1:30. Obviously, 3.5 hours would be enough time to get a VP announced. No such luck. There was a pre-program. RFK Jr. spoke for so long that I left to go pick up my kid from school, came back, and I thought YouTube had frozen, but he was still talking. And so the main point here is the whole thing was chaos. Just not well thought out, right? I just think that there is no – maybe – all of the ideas were, with the possible exception of Jesse Ventura, which is just like, that's crazy, but it's like RFK crazy. The other ones, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Mike Rowe, all nuts. This just seems like the only person willing to say yes, I think, who also happens to have the ability to self-fund a ballot access effort.
Yeah, that seems like the real, yeah. And she's got a little sort of like woo-woo.
Oh, lots of very woo-woo. Very
Northern
woo-woo.
California vibes.
Yeah.
So no offense. I
mean, oh, yeah. Just the salt of the earth down there in Southern California.
So we're real America down here. Yeah. So it's interesting. Some of Kennedy's supporters, or at least people claiming to be his supporters, don't seem too happy about the pick. A few appear to be planning an event called the Save RFK Jr. Rally, intended to recall Shanahan and his campaign manager, who's Kennedy's own daughter-in-law and also a former CIA officer. The organizers, they have this event on his website because on RFK Jr.'s website, supporters can go on and organize their own campaign events. So the organizers of this event say that she's using her divorce settlement money from Sergey Brin to, quote, manipulate the Kennedy campaign. And they're asking, quote, what will come of the Kennedy family after Robert's presidential campaign is derailed by a poor vice president running mate, or he is assassinated by the CIA to install Nicole Shanahan as president? Let's not wait around to find out. I guess this is what happens when you let anyone who visits your campaign website organize their own events.
Or, more likely, your entire rise to political fame is based on spreading dangerous conspiracy theories.
Yeah, eventually they're going to come bite you in the ass.
I mean, just these are the kind of people you're bringing to your campaign, right?
Another one on the docket, if you can't go to that event, you can also go to the dramatic reading of RFK's sex diary. That event is listed as taking place at 69 Scumbag Drive, Intercourse, Pennsylvania.
I don't think that's real.
You don't think that's a real one?
No.
Who knows? We're just asking questions. Maybe. You never know.
That's right.
I don't know.
We're going to do our own research.
Maybe they want you to think it's fake. You think about that.
That's what pharma wants.
So most of the RFK news isn't that funny. The folks at Split Ticket just ran a poll with only 18 to 29-year-old voters that finds Biden at 35%, Trump at 25%, and RFK Jr. at 23%. There's also a new Quinnipiac poll that also has RFK Jr. taking about a quarter of the youth vote. Thoughts on those numbers and, in general, what the Biden campaign should be doing about Kennedy?
Well, those numbers aren't good, John. I'll tell you that.
No, they're not. No, they're not. I mean, Joe Biden won the youth vote by 20 points, I believe.
23 points for under 29 20. Voters was the in the Pew Validated Voter Study, just to pick a random one. You know, I talked to Liz about this for a while, but you're going to have to eventually have trusted, I think it's going to be less about what Biden does or even like necessarily advertising from the campaign, but you're going to need some sort of trusted messengers making the case for who RFK Jr. really is. So he has these environmental credentials and all this woo-woo stuff, as you described it, as you look down your nose on us from Real America in LA.
She met her last husband at a Wanderlust yoga festival. I mean, come on.
I'm not defending Nicole Shanahan here. I'm making fun of you. It's two different things. But, you know, he has very right-wing positions on immigration, right-wing positions on abortion. The IVF stuff, I think, very powerful. Okay. Right now, he's just a name with some Democratic patina that is not Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And we're going to have to fill in the blanks of that. And if we do that, I think a lot of those voters can come home. And the good news is there's time to do it.
Yeah, I found it somewhat hopeful when Liz said that a third of the people who say they're going to support RFK Jr. Have no idea what he stands for. Any of his visions is just literally just based on his name.
Yeah. And it's one person who's not Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Right.
A few other interesting things I found in that split ticket poll. Biden and Trump are both quite unpopular with younger voters, but a lot more of them hold a strongly unfavorable view of Trump than they do Biden. And among those who are certain to vote, young people who are certain to say they're certain to vote, it's Biden 41, Trump 28, Kennedy 18. And then the double haters. Trump is not getting the double haters. He's only getting 6% of people who don't like Biden or Trump. And Biden's getting 29%, and actually RFK Jr. is winning that group, which is not totally surprising. And his strongest demo is independent young voters, which is a group that he is actually winning. It's the one demo he's winning in that youth voter. I think it's an interesting poll just because a lot of these, when we were talking about the youth vote, it's usually like a subsample of a larger poll. And in some of these polls, it shows like Trump winning the youth vote. Yep. And this does not show this. This poll says Biden has problems with young voters, but it's not that they like Trump. It's just that they don't like Biden. And right now they're parking themselves with RFK Jr. or saying that they're not going to vote.
Yeah. And the good news of that is they're not going to Trump. The more challenging news is you have to win almost all of them back because you can't afford not to. Because if they vote for RFK or they don't vote, that is a minus one from the Biden column, presuming most of them voted for Biden in 2020.
Yep. And then you've got to make that vote up somewhere else. So,
and okay. I don't know where that's coming from. So,
yeah, I know. Meanwhile, our friends at No Labels are having some real trouble finding anyone to be their spoiler candidate. Friend of the pod, Chris Christie, officially declined to be on the No Labels ticket on Wednesday, saying he concluded that doing so would only help Donald Trump. Good for Chris Christie. We always knew he was he'd be a hero in the end. As Playbook put it this morning, quote, Christie joined Senators Joe Manchin, Bill Cassidy, Mitt Romney, Representative Dean Phillips, former Governors Nikki Haley, Larry Hogan, and John Huntsman, and former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, among others, in passing on a chance to be No Labels candidate. On top of that, the group's chairman, former Senator and former Democrat Joe Lieberman, died on Wednesday at age 82. Complications from a fall, apparently. Very sad. Lieberman himself pointed out in one of his final interviews that No Labels might ultimately fail to find and field a bipartisan unity ticket and said, quote, if it's Trump and Biden, for me, it's an easy choice. What do you think? Is this thing falling apart? Is there anyone else left to run on the No Labels ticket?
It seems like it's falling apart. Like, could they find a random person to a random Republican state legislator and a random independent or Democrat somewhere to be the vice president? Sure. But the idea that they're going to recruit someone of name value, a former senator, a governor, a former presidential candidate, that seems to have fallen apart before their eyes. And that is positive news for the Biden campaign.
Yeah. And again, they keep saying like, oh, we're not going to field a ticket if it's not a ticket that can win. And I do think that, I mean, that argument, you know, we thought was bullshit the whole time, but it just makes it harder to argue that if it is like two no-name candidates that no one's ever heard of before and not two candidates with like, you know, a real background. And I think that they're definitely running out of those.
I don't care if they ran two former presidents, right? Or it doesn't matter.
There's
a constitutional barrier to them winning. The whole thing is based on a lie. And the lie is that there is a world in which they could possibly win. All they can do is spoil one way or the other. All the polling shows they would spoil things in Trump to help Trump. So don't do it, right? It's that, which is why a lot of these people have decided not to do it. They don't want to run a presidential campaign that they're certainly going to lose and hand the election to Trump and forever be like a persona non grata in polite society for ending democracy out of some fanciful ego trip.
And I do think that's, you know, why Liz mentioned that the strongest argument against Kennedy is like a vote for Kennedy is a vote for Trump.
Yep.
You know, like you're not, you can like Kennedy, you can not like Trump and Biden, but he's not going to win the presidency. Especially, and if he doesn't get on the ballot everywhere, then it's an even more powerful argument, right? Like, sure, he's on in some swing states, but you're throwing away your vote because it's mathematically impossible for him to win. So, all right, before we get to the interview, we haven't yet talked about the deadly collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, mainly because when a tragedy like that occurs, you wait for an investigation to figure out what happened, and then you hope that the government fixes the bridge as soon as possible. Alas, that is not the world we live in anymore, Dan. Wired Magazine ran a non-exhaustive list of things that have been blamed for the bridge collapse on social media. The list includes President Biden, Hamas, ISIS, P. Diddy, Nickelodeon, India, Barack Obama, Islam, aliens, Sri Lanka, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, wokeness, Ukraine, foreign aid, the CIA, Jewish people, Israel, Russia, China, Iran, COVID vaccines, DEI, immigrants, black people, and lockdowns. And lest you think that these are just random social media accounts generating these conspiracy theories, think again. On Twitter, Marjorie Taylor Greene asked ominously, is this an intentional attack or an accident? Utah State Representative Phil Lyman, a candidate for governor, tweeted, DEI equals DIE. And various Republicans beclowned themselves on right-wing television, as they are prone to do. Let's listen.
This is a horrifying event. Is this terrorism? How the hell did this happen? Is this incompetence? Who's allowing this? How did this happen?
The White House has issued a statement on this saying that there's no indication of a nefarious intent in the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. But of course, you've been talking a lot about the potential for wrongdoing or potential for foul play given the wide open border.
You look at our critical infrastructure, and I'm one of these people that believes we've never fully come out of all the lockdowns and the COVID issues. If you talk to employers in America, they'll tell you that filling slots with employees who aren't drug-addled is a very huge problem.
The question here is maybe for the Department of Transportation, whether it is with the airlines and what's going on with Boeing and all the problems they're having, or in this case, you know what? Don't worry about tree equity, Buttigieg. Don't worry about all the other issues that go along with using the proper pronouns. Let's worry about people, keeping people safe.
What the fuck is tree equity?
Can we, I have to admit, I did not read the entire Wired Magazine article. Can we double click on the Nickelodeon as the cause?
There's a scandal with a documentary about Nickelodeon and a couple of the producers in Nickelodeon, with some awful sexual stuff with some of this.
Okay, that's
you don't want to go down that rabbit hole, Dan.
Yeah, that's you.
But
I'm
guessing that's why Nickelodeon popped up.
Okay, all right, host of Offline, way to go down the rabbit hole.
Hey, look, I have to do my own research. What the hell is wrong with these people, Dan?
I mean, they're just the worst people imaginable. I mean, this is all a grift. It's a grift for money. It's a grift for attention, and the opportunities to do this come when there are these events that spark intense online conversation. Those that happen so far less than they used to, right? We're now in so many different, we're prisons to the individual algorithms. We are on all these different platforms. In the old days, something like this happened. There would be like a piece of video footage, a tragedy, a crash, someone would die, and then the entire world would gather and talk about it. And now when these things do break through, the people who are searching for clout, searching for money, searching for attention, try to get there as fast as humanly possible to drive some sort of conversation down some sort of insane rabbit hole. And there's two kinds of things, right? A lot of these conspiracy theories are about getting attention and followers for some real grifters. The political stuff is all about very relentlessly and cynically and deviously using any opportunity you possibly can to push your worldview, right? To say that this is like the idea this is something to do with pronouns or DEI or all these things is dangerously absurd. But then what you're doing is you get the outrage backlash to virality, right? You say this horrible thing, right? Like the person who called the mayor of Baltimore, the DEI mayor, and then everyone responds to it. The algorithm sees all that engagement as positive and shows it to more people, and that person gets more attention and builds more followers and can then monetize those followers either financially or politically. And this is the world we live in. This is the social media world that it continues to exist, and it gets worse as some of the guardrails come down with people like Elon in charge of Twitter/X.
And it is a social media story. And when it happened and we saw some of these conspiracies, Max and I decided we're going to be talking about it on Offline this week. But it also has bled into politics and is going to have like potentially real world effects here. Republicans in Congress are already hinting that they may not pass the emergency funding necessary to fix the bridge, or at least not without extracting some concessions from Joe Biden. And it's just like, to me, it's just another example of how like you have two parties, right? So you have this bridge that you drive across every day to get to work. An accident destroys the bridge. One party says, hey, we're going to move heaven and earth to fix this bridge as fast as we can, which is basically what Joe Biden said, what Pete Buttigieg said, what the mayors, the governor, everyone else said. We're going to get this done. The other party says, we're not giving you any money to fix the bridge that we think collapsed because of corporate diversity initiatives, drug addicts, COVID lockdowns, and a cyber attack that's the beginning of World War III. That's what Alex Jones said. Who do you want in charge? You want the party that's going to fix the bridge so you can get your ass to work, or the party that says all that kind of shit? It's a very clear choice. And it's like the same, it fits in the same bucket as you know, Taylor Swift is a deep state psyop, and she and Travis Kelce rigged the Super Bowl, and, you know, the ghost of Hugo Chavez and Mark Zuckerberg rigged the last election and stole it from Donald Trump. I mean, these people are fucking weirdos. They are weirdos. If you ran into one of them at a coffee shop, you would not let them watch your laptop if you went to the bathroom. Why are you going to elect them to run the fucking country?
Put that in an ad. If you do let them watch your laptop, clear your internet history immediately when you get back.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you're probably going to jail because they probably probably committed some kind of cyber attack. Anyway, all right, before we go to break, we're less than 100 days away from the release of our book, Democracy or Else, How to Save America in 10 Easy Steps. And Cricket is giving back by donating the profits from the book to support Vote Save America and 2024 campaigns. If that's not incentive enough for you, we're also going to be giving away some limited edition Democracy or Else water bottles to keep you hydrated while following our guide to saving democracy. Love when I learn about things from the housekeeping. Didn't know about that. Didn't know about the water bottles.
I always read the housekeeping so I can just watch the look on your face as you discover the things the company you started is doing. It's so good. Oh man, that was
all
that
you
was
have
worth
to
it.
Do. I forgot the end of the pitch because it's the next page. All you have to do is pre-order the book, upload a copy of your receipt, and you will be entered for a chance. You guys, just a chance to win the water bottle? Anyway, head to crooked.com/books for the details. I'm sorry, everyone. When we come back, Tommy talks to Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett.
I am thrilled to welcome to the show today a representative from the great state of Texas, Congressman Jasmine Crockett. Welcome to L.A.
Thank you so much. It's interesting when you use great in Texas in the same sentence nowadays. But yes.
How did you guys like incept all of us to say great state of Texas? You know what I mean? It's just like a thing you say.
I don't know. Texas is a cult in and of itself, just so you know, right? Like everything's bigger in Texas and we're still in like everybody that's been here in California and we're bringing them to Texas. It's a cult mentality. So.
Also, your mom is here with you, I think.
She is.
Just wanted to welcome her to the studio. It's like every once in a while you have elected officials come in with like 15 staffers. It's fun to have someone rolling with their mom. That's a much better way to go.
Yes. She's referred to as the mama staffer.
I love that. Wow. She probably keeps you honest.
She does.
Well, listen, thank you so much for being here. You have this fascinating role as a freshman lawmaker. You serve on the House Oversight Committee, which has put you in the middle of this like wild effort to impeach President Biden, to go after his children. So just wondering, what has that experience been like for you? Because like, I don't know, calling it a circus is kind of an insult to like Cirque du Soleil or people that are organized, you know what I mean? But you just kind of got thrown in there.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And to add to the drama, last week I was added to the weaponization committee well. So we'll see what happens with that. But you know what? There are days that I wake up and I'm like, why did you decide to do this? What are you doing? Is this really like the best uses of your time? And then when you think about the fact that I could have never really contemplated being in Congress, let alone being a freshman, having to defend the president of the United States in a sham impeachment, I think about the history that may or may not be allowed to be taught in the future and how I'm literally living history. And the work that I'm doing is truly of service to this country. And it's not so much about President Biden himself, but it's about our institution. And it's about whether or not our institution can survive kind of the radical, maniacal, idiocracy that we're dealing with, and being able to push back on that and hopefully preserve some semblance of respect for the institution makes me say, all right, lace up your shoes. You got to get ready to go.
Get ready to go.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a serious person. You're a public defender. You were in the Texas State House. How do you prepare for a hearing where you have a Republican colleague that's holding up explicit photos and like all these stunts. Like, what do you do to get ready for that? Watch wrestling?
You don't ever get ready for that. I remember the first time Marjorie decided that she was going to show nudes. It threw us all off. We were like, wait a minute, what just happened? Like, yeah. It was just like, we had no warning whatsoever. And it's like, just when you think it can't get any lower or more ridiculous, she finds a way.
Yeah.
And so you don't prepare for that. But you mentioned that I've been a public defender, and ultimately I've been a trial lawyer. And unlike civil attorneys that have depositions and they know what people are going to say, or if they don't say it, they can correct them and really get them together. In a criminal case, you never know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think that really it's my criminal defense experience in the courtroom that's prepared me best for Congress, right? Like, who knew you needed to deal with, like, the criminal world to figure out.
They might be sitting next to you.
Exactly. Yeah, no, seriously. In fact, in our last hearing, listening to Parnas talk about, I mean, he called out Congressman Sessions. He called him out. He's like, oh, yeah, he was a part of that. He knew this was all fake. And, like, Sessions is sitting there on this impeachment committee where Parnas is like, oh, no, it was me. It was Trump. It was Sessions. It was Giuliani. And they all knew that this was a lie and that this was propaganda being pushed by Russia. And here it is. He's still pushing that propaganda. I mean, it was a wild moment for me.
Lev Parnas, who was, you know, Giuliani's guy in the impeachment Ukraine inquiry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wild. So the chairman of the committee, James Comer, he seems to be suggesting that rather than holding a vote to impeach President Biden and get a trial going in the Senate, that he might instead make a criminal referral to the Department of Justice in case Joe Biden wants to prosecute himself, I guess, or if Donald Trump maybe prosecutes him if he's reelected. Do you think that's a suggestion that they're giving up on impeachment?
Yeah. I mean, it was never really, it was never going anywhere, right? And when you have members of the Freedom Caucus that are resigning Congress because they think the impeachment is so ridiculous. I mean, it is a bad day to be a Republican, right? Like, when you're losing the Freedom Caucus. And so, you know, I think that Comer really doesn't know how to get out of this tangled web that he's in. Most people don't even realize that we have three committees of jurisdiction as it relates to the impeachment. It's oversight, it's ways and means, as well as judiciary. But the hearings that everyone remembers that are seared into everyone's minds are the failed hearings and oversight. Right. And, you know, there's been a lot of internal turmoil as it relates to the Republican Party overall about the prosecution of this impeachment inquiry. And when you start to lose Newsmax and Fox News, you know that, like, all right, I'm just not going to have the votes. And, you know, Moskowitz, Congressman Moskowitz out of Florida, another freshman, he is an interesting guy, to say the least. But I remember at our last hearing, you know, usually we'll talk kind of in the interim and we go around the same time. And he's like, so what are you going to do? I was like, I don't know, you know, this and maybe that and, you know, whatever. And then I was like, what about you? He's like, I've got an idea, but I need to go last. And so I was like, all right, you know, and now he's not last technically in order right now. And then when I saw that he basically called for the impeachment vote, I was like, what are you doing? But only Moskowitz would do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he called Comer's bluff. He wouldn't. He was like, I'll vote for impeachment right now. Let's go.
Yeah. They were like, and, what do we do?
Yeah,
they just like froze.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it showed America exactly where we are on this, which is nowhere. So we'll see what happens next.
One issue you focus on a lot is reproductive rights.
Yeah.
You've been calling out right-wing judges, talking about how they're trying to restrict abortion access, and more recently, IVF. We have this great legal show here called Strict Scrutiny. They cover the Supreme Court. They believe that the arguments you're hearing out of courts in Alabama, for example, that essentially they briefly forced the state's IVF clinics to close. The argument is basically that fertilized embryos should be recognized as people and thus have the same legal rights as people. They think that's where the Supreme Court is heading, right? So I was wondering if you could help listeners understand what the impact of that kind of fetal personhood argument would be on abortion access, IVF, and all the things that folks care deeply about.
It is so psychotic. These people are psycho. And I'm saying that as a preacher's child, so don't say I'm sacrilegious.
I will not.
They are psycho. You know, and it's so frustrating to me as someone who practiced civil rights and felt like I always had to prove a Black person's personhood after they were killed. It seems like there was every excuse in the book to kill a Black, walking, living, and breathing human being. And then you want to talk about embryos and say that they are people, something that cannot breathe. It is absolutely insane. And honestly, if you care about people, I just need you to care about them all the way through.
Right.
Like from the cradle to the grave, as we would say, you know, because you're forcing people to have children. Yet I'm fighting with Republicans in the House when it comes to things like SNAP benefits, where people only get $6 a day. You don't want to feed them once they're here.
Or house
so
them.
Do you yeah. really care? Like, it's very frustrating. So I'll get off of that and get on the legal stuff. You know, it is beyond dangerous, but I think that while Democrats have been accused of not being the best messengers, I can tell you that the best thing that we got going for us ever is the Republicans opening their mouths and attempting to legislate and attempting to craft some sort of legal precedence. It is amazing. It is so helpful. Like, I just want to sit here and be silent and say, watch them work.
Yeah,
right?
Look at Alabama.
Because in Alabama, we just saw that they flipped a seat in a special election over a 20-point swing in that seat. I promise you, before the IVF decision, there was probably no chance, no money, no support whatsoever for that now newly elected lawmaker. These radical folk are on the wrong side of history. And what is frustrating, an additional point of frustration for me, is when we talk about abortion access, it really is only talking about a certain demographic of folk, to be perfectly honest. We're talking about the lower socioeconomic people not being able to access the healthcare that they need. And it's one of the reasons that I applaud a Dr. Jannard or a Kate Cox out of the state of Texas, because these are women that say, I recognize my privilege. I know I can leave the state. I know that I have the money to be able to afford to go somewhere else to get the healthcare access that I need. But I care about those other women that won't have that access. And they decided to put their entire very personal fight front and center because they were fighting for other women. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, those women fled our state and they went somewhere else. The interesting part about this repro fight now is bringing in IVF that brings in a different category of folk.
It's a very expensive procedure.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
And so now, when we were talking about abortion, it was more a lower socioeconomic that was really losing their access unless and until we ended up with a nationwide ban.
Yep.
But now this fight is a bigger coalition because now we're talking about the more affluent folk not having access to being able to make decisions about how and when they create a family. And so, you know, while in my opinion, it shouldn't have taken a trigger out of Alabama to build this coalition, people should have seen that this was an attack on freedom as a whole, because that's what we're experiencing in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people all the time, I don't really care if you agree with abortion or not. Not really my job to make you agree. But if you believe that this country is based upon freedom, if you believe in freedom, then you should take issue with what's going on as it relates to repro, because it's not stopping at repro. When you look at this radical Supreme Court and what we've had since the three Trump appointees to the Supreme Court, it's been diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's been the LGBTQIA community. And after the Dobbs decision, now it's, well, let's go after mifepristone. Then it's going to be that they're going to go after contraception in general. You know, the only thing that we can assure you is that the Loving case is going to be safe and sound because Clarence Thomas is married to a white woman. I mean, that is the only thing that seemingly is safe right now. Everything else that we have considered to be safe. And I think that this is the lesson that we all need to have as a takeaway. You can never get comfortable. Yeah. You can never get comfortable. Democracy and freedom have to be fought for in every single generation. And it's one reason that I do have so much faith and hope in Gen Z, because I do believe that they understand how serious this is, whether we're talking about guns or whether we're talking about repro, whether we're talking about the environment, or whether we're talking about how wars are prosecuted in the future. These are going to be, in my opinion, I know that some people hate to use the term, but the real woke folk, the people that are paying attention to everything and really can get our country back on track if there's a country for them to get back on track.
Yeah. In Texas, I think Governor Abbott says he supports IVF. I imagine that he's put forward a bunch of laws to protect it and make sure it's safe and there's access going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. We only meet once every 2 years.
Right.
So,
you're right.
So they're not currently in session. That's for sure. They just had elections. They'll go back into session in January. But he loves to call special sessions
right. For
everything else that's so important to him, such as school vouchers. He wants to call special sessions for that.
Hmm.
But, you know, this IVF thing, it just sounds good.
It's infuriating. I'm sorry to say her name twice in this interview, but Marjorie Taylor Greene, she threatened to oust Speaker Johnson recently. There's been some debate over whether Democrats should vote for Speaker Johnson to save his job in return for some concessions. What do you think of that idea? And is there like a wish list that Democrats should fight for?
I think that you can count on me to be a no for MAGA Mike no matter what. So just watch the board. You won't find Congresswoman Crockett saving MAGA Mike. Now, what leadership decides to do, maybe with some of our frontline members and things like that, people in districts other than mine, you know, I think that we leave those negotiations up to leadership. I think that you don't get something for nothing.
Right.
For sure.
Sure,
I mean, we've been getting kind of scraps. I mean, you know, it's like, oh, you can pass a budget finally 6 months later. Like, really? Like, seriously? You know, it's like, oh, okay, well, we'll vote to keep the government open. Really? Like, yeah. We should be doing, like, these are, you know, it's bare minimum that
crazy,
we're getting,
yeah.
For sure. But, you know, we used to live in a time where you could expect in a very bipartisan way that when it came to matters of national security, and foreign affairs, for the most part, we'd pretty much be on a similar page. I mean, the difference was, you know, Democrats have never really cared for how bloated our defense budget has been, because we bloat defense and then non-defense, which is everything that takes care of everyday people, is always like getting the scraps,
yeah.
Right? Like in trying to bring some parity to that, especially since, you know, defense can't seem to ever pass an audit. But I will tell you, as it relates to Ukraine, I am very concerned. And it's not just for the Ukrainians. It is legitimately for the world. We're talking about Russia potentially having access to a nuclear plant that's in Ukraine, either being able to take that over or potentially destroying it and causing harm environmentally in that way. Not to mention the idea of allowing Putin to be emboldened further is problematic, not just for us, but for the world. And so, you know, the idea that we can't unite around going after or pushing back on Putin is a problem. Not to mention, I don't know how many people really understand that if Putin decides, okay, I've got Ukraine, now where do I move? And he moves into a NATO country. And for people that don't understand what a NATO country is, mm-hmm. and I know that Trump is talking about pulling us out of NATO, but that is also a very dumb idea.
Yeah.
That means that your mothers, your brothers, your sisters, your uncles, your aunts, your children, they then have to suit up and go into war. So when people are talking about the cost, we have a monetary cost of helping Ukraine, but we may end up having monetary as well as American lives that are lost if we don't nip this in the bud right now. And so it's very crucial, and this is going to hit home really hard. And, you know, people see the big numbers and they're like, oh, that's a lot of money. They can do something else with the money. It's not really how the budget works. You're either on this side of the ledger or that side of the ledger. If they don't spend it on this war, they're going to spend it on something else, this defense. It's not going to somehow come over to the other side of the ledger.
Right.
And and I really am just concerned about our national security, and I really want them to take it seriously. So this is not a win for Democrats. This is a win for Americans, Ukrainians, and honestly, the rest of the world. So absolutely, we should take up the supplemental. I don't know that we would ever have too much of a fight, as it's not been talked about, over funding for Taiwan. There seems to be bipartisan support for Taiwan because there seems to be bipartisan issues with China. That's why they decided TikTok had to be the one thing we could do.
It's like the only thing they
agree on, because they care so much about China. So, I mean, you know, I think that we can always get the funding for Taiwan if necessary. But also, the Republicans do not want to support the people of Gaza at all. They have passed two packages out of the House. The first one was a package to give money to Israel while giving while defunding IRS. The second one was just to give money to Israel. They have no intentions. They equate the Palestinian people with being Hamas, which is not true. And so, you know, I think that we need to make sure that we push really hard for aid for the Palestinian people. I think we also need to make sure that we're pushing for aid for the Haitians. The Haitians have really taken just a back seat. And, you know, I don't know if we'll get the world to really wrap their arms around the Haitians like they've wrapped their arms around other folk. But, you know, I try to remind people that the Haitians showed up at our door knocking. And when they showed up at the border in Texas, we saw law enforcement on horses whipping Haitians.
Right. Yeah, that's awful.
And then they sent them back, and no one ever asked the question, why are Haitians coming to the United States? There's this idea in America that everybody just wants to, you know, walk and risk their lives and risk being raped and robbed and all this other kind of stuff just to get to America. I got news for you. That ain't the case. And at that time, their president had been assassinated. But no one was really talking about it, and the national news wasn't really covering it. And gangs have been emboldened ever since. They execute. I'm saying they. They never said who officially killed the president. But it's a very dangerous set of circumstances. And right now, the Dominican Republic doesn't want to allow them in either. And so, you know, it is important for America to do what America does best, which is to be big brother. And I try to stress to people that foreign aid and having good trade policies and making sure that other countries are stable, that is a benefit to the entire world. And it takes the burden off of our immigration, our failed immigration system as well. And so, you know, I would like to see a push for some help for Haiti, some help for the people of Gaza, as well as Ukrainians.
Yeah, I mean, that last bill also cut off support for UNRWA, which is the only UN agency on the ground doing all this assistance in Gaza.
And that's been drama for sure.
Bad decision.
And I know some people are like, oh my God, we can't believe you voted to fund the government. I'm like, I had to fund the government. I do understand, you know, being in the minority, we don't get everything that we want. One of the things that hasn't really been pushed out there is that it's our understanding that UNRWA has enough funding for now. Again, this was FY24 that we're 6 months behind on. So what we're talking about is a funding bill that only goes for 6 months in the first place.
Got it.
It's our understanding that UNRWA is going to be good with funding until, I want to say, January. And so we're supposed to be working on FY25. Theoretically, if FY25 comes about in a timely fashion,
right, yeah,
then
we'll see.
UNRWA is good to go, and or if we add it back. But pulling it out, in my understanding, was not going to essentially defund UNRWA at this exact moment and put them in a destitute situation.
That's good to know. Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Haiti. I mean, the history of foreign countries meddling in Haiti, go back to the French, the U.S. sending troops in a bunch of times, the failed earthquake response. But, you know, the assassination in 2021 of the president has led to the security situation devolving. And hopefully this Kenyan security force goes in. But you're right, the U.S. has pledged a bunch of money for that peacekeeping mission. And if we don't step up, it's not at all clear who will.
Absolutely.
Okay, now the hard questions. You ready? So who's the best Beyonce? Destiny's Child Beyonce, Lemonade Beyonce, Cowboy Carter Beyonce.
It's going to have to be Destiny's Child.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, they're my exact age. So that's the original
right.
for me.
And you grew up with that.
And I grew up with it.
Okay. Dallas Cowboys or Houston Texans?
I represent Dallas. Dallas
but you
Cowboys.
Went to school in Houston, right?
I know,
right?
But okay. Dallas Cowboys.
You like Dak? Are we on the...
I'm a Dak fan.
Okay. On the Dak train?
Yeah. Good I'm a Dak know. Fan. Don't really care for the other guy that owns
Jerry?
The Cowboys. But I love Dak.
You love Dak. I'm not a Jerry fan either. That's a whole other podcast talking about Jerry. I know you were born and raised in St. Louis.
Yep.
You live in Texas now. St. Louis-style barbecue or Texas barbecue?
Ooh. That is a hard one. I think I've been in Texas too long, so I'm going to have to go with Texas.
Texas barbecue. Last question. Trump is now selling a Bible-Constitution combo for only $60. I just want to know if you're in the market. You're thinking of picking a couple up.
Absolutely not.
No?
No. He doesn't know a Bible verse, so I don't know what's in that Bible.
What did he say when he was asked? He was like Corinthians 4 or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, did he? He's been asked a million times, and he couldn't even get Jesus wept. He can't do nothing. Mm-mm.
No, he's...
Mm-mm. I don't trust that Bible.
Who? I mean, I feel like you can get a Bible for free somewhere. You probably don't have to buy a Trump one.
Maybe on your phone.
maybe the internet.
There's a whole app for that.
The Constitution. I feel like you can find that.
There's a whole app for that. Too. And I trust my Bible app a lot better.
Congresswoman Crockett, thank you so much for coming to the studio. Great talking to you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for fighting the good fight in that wacky committee. It's, you know, God bless you for keeping your patience in that place.
Thanks for having me.
One last thing to leave you with. Larry David went on Chris Wallace's show on CNN on Wednesday night. And Wallace, in what I would say was a shining example of knowing your subject, let Larry tee off on Donald Trump. Let's listen.
Oh, I mean, you can't go a day without thinking about what he's done to this country, because he's such a little baby that he's thrown 250 years of democracy out the window by not accepting the results of an election. I mean, it's so crazy. He's such a sociopath. He's so insane. He just couldn't admit to losing. And we know he lost. He knows he lost. And look how he's fooled everybody. He's convinced all these people that he didn't lose. He's such a sick man. He's so sick. Anyway, no, it hasn't impacted me at all.
I love that.
It's great. It is great.
I love that especially, and I was texting a friend about it last night, and he was like, here's the thing, there's a lot of discussions about like polling and the right message. He's like, you know, that's a pretty good one. Just like, come on, you all know the guy's fucking nuts. But you know, obviously the Trump base doesn't know that, but a lot of other people that are still like, they don't like Joe Biden, they don't like Donald Trump, but like, this man is crazy. His party has gone nuts. They think the DEI caused bridge collapses, Taylor Swift's rigging the Super Bowl, they got Donald Trump thinking the election's stolen. They're fucking nuts. What are we doing? It's great.
Also, they want to cut Social Security and ban abortion. That just throw this.
There is that too. Yeah. There is that too. Yeah, but they're also just like, you know, crises come and they happen, like COVID did in the pandemic, and look how Donald Trump handled it. Right? There are serious things that happen in the world, and the question is, who do you want in charge when the serious crises happen? Because you know they will, and you don't want that guy in charge. Anyway, Larry David should come on. Come on, Pod Save America, Larry. It's great. Are you watching the season of Curb?
I am not. I'm going to. Oh, I will. But
it's
I am.
Fantastic. It's great. It's just, I'm going to miss the show when it's gone. All right. That's it for us. Thanks to Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett for coming by. And we will be back with a new pod on Tuesday.
Bye, everyone.
If you want to get ad-free episodes, exclusive content, and more, consider joining our Friends of the Pod subscription community at crooked.com/friends. And if you're already doom scrolling, don't forget to follow us at Pod Save America on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube for access to full episodes, bonus content, and more. Plus, if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Olivia Martinez and David Toledo. Our associate producers are Saul Rubin and Farah Safari. Kira Joachim is our senior producer. Reed Cherlin is our executive producer. The show is mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Jordan Cantor is our sound engineer, with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Writing support by Hallie Kiefer. Madeline Herringer is our head of news and programming. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Andy Taff is our executive assistant. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Haley Jones, Mia Kelman, David Tolles, Kirill Pelaviv, and Molly Lobel.